So we are on, let's just see, we're on our fifth meeting. Claire, that was a 5 you were doing over there, right? That was a, okay. So we're in our fifth meeting discussing the tree of life, which is the basic structure. It's one of the basic structures of the interior sciences, which is a word. I mean, just to say also, it's a word we've created in cosmological humanism. We call them interior sciences instead of mysticism. So it's a word we use very precisely. One of the things I was talking about in our last conversation is how I'm trying to share with even my closest friends, students, not to use words automatically, right? To actually use words in a fresh way, right? Right. So it's sciences are very, these are the interior sciences, meaning there's empirical validation, there's experiment, there's a community of the adequate. So it's an interior science, right? Of, and we don't call it Judaism, for example.
Hebrew
Judaism,
wisdom.
right? We're doing Hebrew wisdom, or I even call it, for many years, I called it Hebrew wisdom for like probably 25 years. And then I kind of shifted it to the lineage of Solomon, right? Because I want to locate us in the lineage of Solomon, right? But the lineage of Solomon in the broader context of this new story of value that we're calling cosmological humanism, right? So that's the, so what we're doing here is, so for example, with our friend Layman Pascal, so Layman's doing a series of beautiful talks with me, which we're having, where I'm kind of taking him into the sources of cosmological humanism. And then he just started a talk we did, and we do a couple of dialogues with him. I did one, we're gonna do a second one with Zach on cosmological humanism. So just even before we get started, you know, everybody, I asked my young and dear, you know, student, friend, partner, Zach, to give a course on the new book, right? First Principles and First Values. And Andrew was everybody like super generous in hosting it in Parallax. So it's going to be a 4 week course. Zach's going to be leading it. I'll come the first week to kind of set the groundwork. But I'm really excited to have Zach leading this course. And it's going to be 4 weeks. And, you know, we'll put in the chat box and send to everyone. So it's an easy, quick 4 weeks in and out. It'll be fantastic. We're going to also in September with Andrew, we're going to start a whole other, you know, course. But I really want to encourage everyone. We're going to try and limit the course to like 20 people, right? You know, so we're going to try and it's going to be a limited course. And it's fantastic. These small courses make a huge difference. David and Jamie and Christina Amelon have been leading a small course on, you know, cosmological humanism, different pieces of it for like 4 years already, David, for like a bunch of years. And it gets every week for a section that has about 20 people. These are, they're the most, so this kind of thing that Andrew's doing at Parallax, and this particular course is super, super, super important. And everyone's going to get this week, kind of really encourage everyone to kind of jump in. You'll have a fantastic time with Zach, right? He does rare, he teaches rarely in this kind of context. I'll be with him in the beginning. Andrew will be facilitating with Claire. So just one, it's a fantastic, and we're launching the book, right? Book, we're launching the book in April. So this is the moment to do it. So I just wanted to give, I wouldn't plug, but just a big invitation to that.
And I just want to say that the courses at Parallax, we've had courses with laymen and other people, and they've been intimate and beautiful and fun and profound. They're really nice small courses that kind of open a portal into a universe. And I think with Zach, if Zach will be a great addition to all of our courses. Okay, well, you said the interior sciences and
Wait.
the interior sciences. The way I understand Hod and Netzach, if we jump right into it as the
Okay.
dyad, on the lower part of the tree, that Hod is more in the science realm, and then Netzach is more in the intuitive arts realm. But again, I know you're going to tell you something that is completely different from how I've understood it and my sources. So you want to jump into that?
Well, I would first, I'm so excited to see you, right? I'm just excited to see you, one. And two, it's just want to share with people like the precision Andrew and I did, it's what makes this place trustworthy, that we can go back and forth, we can be precise, we can, you know, with just kind of this ease and spaciousness. And so I'm just
Well,
excited.
you know what you do, you have a school with a particular perspective, And what we do at Parallax is we invite people from all different schools. So so we're very, very open, and it doesn't mean we agree with everything that everybody has to offer, or that we're promoting any one particular perspective. But we're just very, very open to people who are, you know, sincere and experimental and doing things that we consider to be beautiful in some kind of a way.
Which is insanely beautiful. We're going to, and we'll say one more word about that. Then we'll, and maybe we could set up so we can look at if someone sets up, like we do every time, the Tree of Life in the chat box. So we'll all be able to look at Netzach and Hod and see where they are in the Tree of Life. Maybe while I say this next point, someone can set that up. And in general, we can do it in the future, just on the screen for a second. We could look at it, but for now it'll be enough to put a link in the chat box so we can look at it. But let me just share with you something that's interesting, Andrew, for your own reflection, consideration. And I think, you know, you're a rock star, and Parallax reflects you. I don't know Tom. I don't think we met once, but I don't really know. We don't know each other, but I think he was at one dialogue we did early on, but I have gotten to know you, so I can feel, you know, Parallax and the beauty that you're bringing to it. I want to make a distinction. I had an ongoing, which is directly relevant to what you're saying, and has a lot to do with Netzach and Hod. So let me just maybe frame this in terms of Netzach and Hod, and then make the point so we can already. So in the Tree of Life, and let's see let's take a look in the chat box. In the Tree of Life, right, we have, oh, there we go in the chat box. So you've got Netzach and Hod, right, are in the Tree of Life, right? They are in the lower half, right? And you see on the, if you're looking at the screen, it's on the right side is Netzach and the left side is Hod. Okay. Netzach and Hod. So you've got Netzach is the right path, the right-handed path, and Hod is the left-handed path. And Netzach is triumph. Mm-hmm. I'm triumphant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right? Netzach is forever. It's this forever immutable. So what was that, Jim Croce? If I could put time in a bottle, back when we were like 4 years old. Who can sing if I could put time in a bottle? It's this beautiful song about these moments that you want to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a movie we're going to talk about in One Mountain next week, which is kind of the unlikely story of Benjamin Buttons, which is about, can you stop time and can you go into forever time? So Netzach is triumphant, victorious, forever.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get back to that. And then Hod is, I surrender before you. I surrender. I open up, right? I'm complete open, right? I'm complete opening up the space. I'm surrendering to whatever you have to offer, right? And of course, there's like every, and these two luminations, they're called sefirot.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it, you know, if you're listening to this dialogue, right, then we, you know, look to the first number one in the series, the Tree of Life series, number one, we define the word sfira, the 10 sfirot, the 10 illuminations, right? We also pointed out the word sfira means story. So these are 10 stories of ultimate value that play in the world and that play in the human being. We participate in these stories. So there's a victory story. There's a triumph story. And then there's a surrender story, right? There's a surrender, right? And so, you know, I couldn't sleep late last night, probably because I
you always say that, Mark, in every one of our meetings.
I know.
You're an insomniac, I think. Of
no, usually I'm not. Actually, that's the funny thing is it's Saturday night and Sundays, so I actually try and get to sleep. Just a little, you know, intimate detail here. I try and get to sleep every night at 9. Right, actually, and then what happens is there's like once every like 6-7 days I just can't sleep and I wind up late. And it's often Saturdays and Sundays or the days or Tuesdays, because what actually happens is I do late night study with people, and then it kind of, you know, you're kind of inside the orchard and you kind of can't quite find your way down. So in any case, so I tried to study last night, you know, till about 1 a.m. And at 1 a.m. I didn't have a clear enough mind to study. So I said, okay. So I put on Ridley Scott's Napoleon.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Saw that. Yeah. Ridley Scott's Napoleon. We're now at 1 a.m. And there's this scene in which this a famous battle in which Napoleon bests the Archduke of Austria, who's allied with the young Tsar, and he, mm-hmm. he destroys them in the field of battle. And then there's this moment. So Napoleon is victorious,
yep.
right? And the representative of the other side, whoever had survived, it was a terrible battle on the ice, right, comes to surrender. And there's this moment mm-hmm. when you're in victory and surrender. So that's a dimension of Netzach and Hod, because, you know, and you know that scene between Ulysses S. Grant in America and Robert E. Lee after the Civil War, that's an American illusion, which other people might lose, right, at, I was thinking it was called Appomattox, was where they, you know, the surrender of the Civil War, there's this moment of victory and surrender. You know, whenever, you know, I've talked to my, I have a friend who's a beautiful guy that we do some deep study who kind of plays, you know, in the high temples of sports and value. And so he, you know, he won a Super Bowl, and he kind of describes the relationship, you know, between the victor, right? The victor and the surrenderer. So there's victory and surrender. So now each of these, right? Hod is surrender. I open up, I acknowledge, I bow before you, Hod, right? So for example, when I wake up in the morning, I say, Moda'ani, I surrender to you, God, right? It's this full surrender, right? This full surrender. And these two moments in Jesuit thought, David, live next to each other, right? This triumphant moving forward of victory and this surrender. Now, each of these has a shadow and light version. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Stay with me. So the shadow version of victory is dogma, right? Meaning my dogma, not yours, my dogma, you know, forever and ever, you know, my computer's about to go out. Your position has no place. So I'm both going to triumph over you. My religion, my dogma, my flag, I'm going to triumph over you. I'm right and you're wrong. And I'm the only person with a claim to eternity. So dogma becomes the shadow of Netzach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the shadow of Hod would be a kind of pluralistic relativism, right?
Oh, where, interesting. Okay.
Right, where I kind of, everything has a place at the table. I surrendered everything. So for example, I had a long series of fights, in a good sense, beautiful, with a guy who was really a big brother of mine for quite a few years, a beautiful man, came to a lot of our board meetings, named Michael Murphy, right? And Michael started a little village called Esalen, which had an enormous impact on that. And so Michael was great. And Michael and I used to eat in San Anselmo. There was a place we would go to eat. That was his place to eat. And we would argue. And I would tell him, I'm trying to evolve the source code and articulate a new story of value. And Michael would say to me, right, what are you doing? Right, at Esalen, our principle is mm-hmm. lots come with lots of different perspectives. Now you see how I got to this. And, uh-huh. and his big line was, and no one can capture the flag. That's the principle of Esalen. And I told him, I said, Michael, that was really nice in the 60s and 70s and 80s as we were still in the rebellion against the old organized systems of religion, Michael, that you grew up on. But mm-hmm. That's no longer true, Michael, at a moment of metacrisis. In a moment of metacrisis, actually, the overwhelming moral imperative is not this multi-perspectival vision. That's important always. But then we need to do a synergy into a larger shared story of value. And
does that relate to what you've been talking about recently about heroicism?
Yes, yes. And we're going to get to the hero today, because I want to talk about the hero today. Absolutely.
And Napoleon would be like the shadow of Napoleon would be this, you know, triumphalism.
Right.
And here. Heroicism, which definitely leads to, you know, isolation and tragedy and him being alone on his island in Elba kind of thing.
That's right. So, and as Napoleon becomes, he's going to become the shadow of Netzach, the shadow. Yeah. And we're going to get to you. I'm going to just go slow for a second. I apologize. I'm going to hold before we get to the hero, but you're absolutely right. But just to complete this thought in terms of what you said. So, and then Michael wrote me like maybe one of our last communications. He said, okay, wow, I get it. He said, we were right then, Esalen, you're right now, right? I get the meta crisis. We need a shared story of value. So we literally, and it was in an email, I believe. I got to check. I think it was in an email, right? He really shifted his position with a Hod moment, Mm-hmm. Right? That's when I get this. I'm going to see this alive, right? So if Michael and I were locked in an egoic Netzach argument, we could never shift our position. But if we're actually, we move between Netzach and Hod, so Michael held this position, but then he actually got a deeper take on reality, and he actually got a sense of the meta crisis, which when we first talked, he wasn't getting in the same way. He was doing deep work with Russia, et cetera, but existential risk played in a different way, and he began to see the fragmentation. And so Hod, he surrendered, but he didn't lose any Michaelness in surrendering. He became more of himself, right? And this is deep, right, Lirazi? When I surrender, there's a deep thing in unique self-dharma. When I surrender, I'm fully present. First, I've got to be present. Got to be present, right? And if I've got to be present, then I surrender to the moment, right? I actually get stronger. I got to know which conflict to do and what to argue about. But basically, there's like, I've got to be present. I've got to surrender to the moment, right? I'm not, right? I'm here. I'm here. I'm surrendered to the moment. And then I get stronger. Mm-hmm. I think I navigate better by not surrendering. No, I don't. And I surrender. So Michael had this surrender moment. Now let's take this all into the hero. Okay. So let's go step two. That's what. So now, who's the hero? So the hero, let's throw a sentence out and then we'll get to your Napoleon and then any place you want to go, but let's go step two, which is, and we've been talking about the heroic. That's absolutely true the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to try and talk a lot about the hero today. And I'm going to try and also, everyone, we're going to try and end by within 45 minutes. We're trying to end by 2:15 American time. So that'll be our kind of, but so we'll try and do go deep in here. So I want to say the conclusion. Let's go back and work on how we get to the conclusion. Here's the conclusion. The hero is the precise erotic synergy, spiritual synergy between Netzach and Hod.
Mm-hmm.
Between the thrusting forth of victory, which is the right-handed side, which is Duchra, the masculine side, and the full receiving of the moment, where I fully receive the presence of the moment and I surrender into the moment, and I'm not, right? And when I'm deep in my deepest field of value, I can actually move between Netzach and Hod, right? Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, right? And as in our exchange of letters yesterday, of which we will not share anyone what they were about, we moved between Netzach and Hod. We made a point, we hoded, right? We actually moved gently between those poles. There was no sense of being right. There was a bunch of here's a point, here's a point back, here's a hode, right? So the hero is both surging forward and completely surrendered.
Yeah.
That's the hero, right? That's the hero. And, you know, my archetype of that hero, by the way, is Hector. He's one of my favorite people in
history. Oh, Hector, right.
Hector in the Trojan War. And I love Hector, right? Achilles was not that. Achilles couldn't do it. Right. But Hector was really this incredible, was both surrender. Hector was always surrendered and was always heroic. He was this very, very, very beautiful figure, Hector, in the Trojan War and, you know, in the Iliad. And of course, he didn't get to be played by Brad Pitt in the movie, who played Achilles, which was a shame, but let's not go down that road. Right. So now what's the hero? Let's get what the hero is. So the hero is Netzach. And the hero is always triumph. And what's the triumph of the hero? The hero is heroic because the hero is transparent to the field of value.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the hero is value. The hero is not being good. The hero is goodness. Mm-hmm. The hero is not being truth. The hero is truth. The hero is not being beautiful. The hero is beauty. The hero is eros.
It's so interesting, like the approach that I, you know, I read Dan Fortune's book, which is probably an old book right now, and she uses the image of Aphrodite to represent Netzach, which my tongue kind of wild, but it's just full on erotic.
Yeah. Well, I've never read any of Fortune's books, but I'm aware, you know, obviously that she's in this.
Fun, and whether they're true or not is another question.
Yeah,
but they're beautifully written and they're fun. And then she uses the Hod image is the magician. So it's the reduction into conceptuality, into ideas, into so.
Yeah.
which is quite a kind of different than what you're saying, but I can kind of relate them at the same time somewhat.
Yeah, no, I get it. Right. I mean, Aphrodite, right? There is a dimension of Aphrodite, right? In Netzach, in the sense of the triumph of beauty, right? Beauty is a form of power, right? Yeah. Beauty is a form of, in other words, that's a feminine participation in the field of the hero is always beauty.
Yeah.
Right. In other words, and as when I say the feminine, I mean whether it's masculine or feminine, but there's the feminine archetype hero, right, is not Athena. Right. Right. It's actually Aphrodite. She's the classical, she's the model. She's beauty. Right. And that's and she's triumphant. She that's her power in the world. She navigates reality through that, both in the light. And of course, it can also become shadow. So you, if you understand it that way, right? But then what you might say is that Aphrodite's identified, she is the field of value, and particularly she is the vector of beauty in the field of value. That's why I would say it.
Yeah.
But what makes the hero heroic is that for the field of, by the way, Aphrodite was her favorite son was Hector. Just so we know.
Okay, there you go.
Aphrodite was like, right, was she loved Hector, right? Athena took the side of the Greeks, right? As did Hera, right? But Aphrodite was what her favorite, right, son was first Hector, and then later Paris, of course, right, who was left to die and then kind of rejoins, you know, King Priam's family. But Aphrodite is their patron, right? And they are the heroes, right? In other words, you can actually talk of, we won't right now, the difference between, in a certain sense, in the Trojan War, right, the Greek heroes are pure Netzach without Hod, right? Yeah. And the heroes are actually Netzach and Hod together, and it's only Odysseus, right, who on his journey home, right, combines Netzach and Hod. But
the fascist leaders are often using aesthetics, you know, like feminine aesthetics. So thinking of Napoleon and Hitler, absolutely. and there is this sort of like beauty idea, a negative idea, a shadow of beauty, let's say.
There can be a shadow, right? There can be a shadow of Netzach, right? The power, right? Because beauty has power, right? This notion that beauty is completely right, has power, right? So, but the hero, let's talk about the hero, okay? The hero, right, incarnates value, right? Which is why, right, the hero is valor, right? Right, and this is what we were talking about. We had a conclave of the board. We're talking about this, of the center, right? So the hero is value, right? Value, right, is the V-A-L, right? That's what value is, what validates me. Validation comes through value. It's very beautiful, right? Right. And I'm validated, right, by my own interior sense of self, which has valor, same V-A-L word, or valiance, right? Prince Valiant, I'm valiant, right? And that makes me, the Latin word is valere, which is to be strong, right? Or valentia, which is intrinsic worth, right? Which, right, comes from the field of Eros in me, which is Valentine's Day, Valentius, right? Which is Eros, love, right? That moves in me, and which is my unique valence, right? And a valence, as in the valence of electrons, right, is the configuration of intimacy that allows in the subatomic world, right, there to be Eros between different parts, right, that create larger wholes, right? Mm-hmm. So the hero is a unique, the hero incarnates the field of value, which is why the hero is not afraid of death, right? Because the hero is in the eternal field of value. If you're not in the field of value, you're devastated by your possible death, right? Then the first shock, what we call the first shock of existence, the realization that I'm going to die, destroys me, right? So the true hero, right? Actually, the true hero, right, can be, and I don't love, it's very painful, but the opening of the movie, right, in Saving Private Ryan, right, is this, you know, sense of these boys who pour out onto the beach, you know, of Normandy, you know, knowing that many of them are going to die.
Right?
And, you know, my son, may he live and be well till 120, right? You know, he told me he was in Gaza for several months, and now, you know, and it's unclear whether he's going back, but he basically said, I didn't expect to come back from Gaza. And I was pleased that he told me that after he got back. Right. Right. But in other words, and there was this sense, right, of the enormous, by the way, just, you can't talk about Gaza without talking about the intense tragedy, right, which the rulership of Gaza, Hamas, has inflicted on the Gazan population, which is unimaginable. There's an unimaginable tragedy happening there, right? And you know, and there's also a clear responsibility not to allow what happened on October 7th, because you can't mention Gaza without saying this. I apologize, but I can't. You know what happened on October 7th, meaning the intentional, systemic, sexual torture, brutalization, rape, and murder of women as they had nails driven into them, right, as a kind of systemized act of war, right? That's actually what happened on October 7th, that it was organized and systemized. You can't not respond to that, right? And of course, it's got nothing to do with Israel. It's a jihad issue, and there's jihad when there's no Israel, Iraq, Syria, et cetera. That's just a parenthesis on that issue. But the point is that the Israeli soldiers who are going into Gaza don't want to go in. They want Gaza to be actually free, democratic, independent. Right. No one wants to rule Gaza. Right. But they're willing to give their lives because they realize if we don't stand up against that level of evil on October 7th, then it's going to be, as Hamas promised, repeated again and again, and then repeated all over the United States and all over Europe and all over Asia. It'll become, jihad will become, and that kind of will become part of the fabric, right, of human civilization and its collapse. But the point is that the hero feels the larger field of value, not intellectually, in their body. And therefore, they're willing to actually heroically, that's what a hero means, I'm willing to heroically give up my life for the larger field of value. So I just want to, that's what a hero means. And every, you know, morning.
So that's the surrender side, the hod side, exactly. the willingness to surrender. That's, and if right, you don't have that, you just have a kind of heroism, which is...
Right. You're playing. You've got this kind of weird Greek sense of fame.
Yeah.
Right. Hero plays for fame. Right. So the Greek notion of the hero is, I'm playing for forever. Right. You know, Achilles, right, says, I want stories told about me forever. Netzach, forever. So I'm going to be the heroic Achilles who can, you know, throw his javelin across the Trojan camp and impale someone, which Achilles could. There was no power like Achilles, and he's doing it because he's playing to forever. He doesn't think Agamemnon is a good leader. He doesn't think that Agamemnon, who's the head of the Greek camp, Menelaus's brother, incarnates value, right? Right. He actually thinks Agamemnon is a coward, right? And he's there with his people because he wants to actually exert his prowess. Right. You, when you have that kind of prowess, you want to play. If you can throw a football, you want to be a quarterback. No one's asked me to be a quarterback recently, weirdly. Right. But in other words, Achilles wants to cast his javelin, and he wants to be talked about forever, which is actually, he's the hero, but it's the shadow of the hero. And his Achilles heel is actually exactly that. He's not part of the
shadow. Yeah.
But the genuine, right, Hector stands for value. Right? He's loyal. Right. He believes in his father. He believes in Troy. Right. Mm-hmm. He believes in the right of Paris to love Helen, who didn't love Menelaus. Mm-hmm. Right. And Menelaus kind of cavorted about with everyone, and she had to be kind of the imprisoned wife. And there was a whole, Hector was in the end standing for what he understood to be the field of value. And he dies for that field of value. Right. But it's a very different notion of the hero, both is fully empowered with the audacity of value, she, divinity moving through them, and fully surrendered to that field, right? Right, in this higher individuation of unique heroism beyond any egoic forms. Does that make sense, everyone?
Totally makes sense. That's great. Yeah.
Right. And everyone try and be in this, right? Just trying to check, it's deep, right? So unless you're taking notes, right? Try and kind of be with us, right? To kind of be like, surrender to the moment. That's the heroic is, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be in my full power here. So that's Netzach and Hod. I'm in my full power here. It's such a hard thing to do.
But I'm not trying to triumph over anybody.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Or I'm not trying to win or you know, we're not in a you know, a zero sum game. We're not trying to crush the other opponent and emerge victorious. We're trying to enter the field of value together, right?
Right. And well, let me just say more again, yes, 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 with an and, right? In other words, in a certain sense, we painted in the beginning kind of the vision of the center, which is to articulate a new story of value, which is a shared story. The vision of Esalen, which is don't capture the flag, mm-hmm. right? There's a third vision in which we are trying to triumph.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah.
Right. With great love. Right. And so, for example, right. You know, I take strong issue with, you know, Alexander, at least in my two conversations with him, his kind of intense sense that death is the end of the story, which is,
yeah.
I believe, completely empirically just wrong, right? With a kind of subtle, right, deconstruction of the field of value, which is there. And yet, I'm ecstatic that he's in the world. I think he's a great guy, right? I think he has deep integrity. I'm ecstatic that he's kind of reconnected with the Zoroastrian moment and he's representing it in the world. And yet, you know what I mean? In other words, I think actually I'm going to do everything I can. This is an example. I would to persuade this person that actually, if they actually got these three things right, they'd be much stronger. And I'm not going to be in this kind of, you know, milk toast. Oh, right, right. We're all surrendered to our different positions. They're just different perspectives. No, I think you're awesome.
Oh, no. I mean, in terms of Alexander, I argue with him all the time about
that. Yeah, no, I understand.
I think one of the good things about him, actually, is that he's up for the fight.
Totally.
Even if he's totally wrong about several things and very right about other things.
Yes. You know?
He's always up for a good fight in good faith.
So we're just in Alexander. We apologize for talking about you, brother. Yeah. But I think what we've done is we've articulated this third model here. What we're looking for is a third model. It's not the Esalen, don't capture the flag of the old Esalen.
Yeah, got
it's
it.
Not, right, and at the center, right, the center, we're not trying to do parallax. I want to be clear. We're not saying let's have like tons of different voices that are doing different perspectives. No, we're actually trying to write a great library.
Okay, I'm gonna object here. I'm gonna object here and defend parallax as being. There is a boundary here. It's not
that's
completely.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Totally open, and we don't want just everybody
no,
in.
I agree. I know we were.
But
going
we don't to... have. We're not a school representing a certain kind of value.
I get it. No, what okay. I was actually trying. We're actually agreeing. I mean, you know, embarrassing stuff, right? What I actually was going to try and suggest is that parallax is actually this third model, right? I was actually. We're going in the same direction, which I think, is not actually a kind of don't capture the flag. I think there's an implicit, natural, inherent parameter about, you know, which actually creates a more curated conversation, right? I still think that the overwhelming moral imperative is to actually articulate a shared story of value, right? But you know, I totally get that parallax is trying to do this third. You know, this third moment. So yay on that. Back to our hero.
Okay.
Yay.
So just one more thing about that. I think what is good about parallax is it opens up a field of dialogos, of dialogue, right? And that's why people have enjoyed it or liked it, not because we're just doing lectures about our particular point of view. So.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, no, big. I'm major three cheers for parallax, right? In all ways, right? And that's why I opened with the course. So yes, yes, and yes, and yes, and I wanted to be actually get to the place to say it's actually distinct from what Esalen was doing, right? In exactly the ways that you just described. So yay. So let's just go back to the hero though, because we're in Netzach and Hod.
Yep.
We're in Netzach and Hod. So these are in the tree of life. Netzach, the right-handed path, which is victory forever, right? And then Hod is surrender, right? To this moment, surrender to this person, right? Give up, right? In order to be in the larger field, right? So those are the two moments, mm-hmm. right? And so let's just feel into those moments, right? Because those moments live, we happen to have given an example of how they work kind of the shadow dogma, the appropriate version of the shadow of Netzach dogma, the appropriate version, a new story of value that's a coherent, cogent story of value, right? That actually wants to evolve eternity in some beautiful way, right? As opposed to, right, Hod, whose shadow side would be a materialist pluralism in which there's no parameters, in which, you know, nothing's kosher because everything's kosher, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And you know, and so that's one. And then two, we talked about Netzach and Hod in terms of the hero, right? The hero is both triumphant. They want their story to be told forever, but we want them to want their story to be told forever, not for egoic reasons, not because that's the bard of Greece and that's the only way to have immortality. No, you want your story to be told forever because you've entered the field of value and you've so incarnated the field of value that you enter into forever, right? Right. And that's the notion of the hero. That hero who's identified with the field of value merges with Hod, which is surrender. And I surrender to the field of value, even as they incarnate the field of value. And the word for the merger of Netzach and Hod in the lineage of Solomon, of radical kind of, you know, the audacity, right? The wonder, the triumph, the thrusting forward of the field, right, of value, right, of into victory and the complete surrender, but that's called tekufot, T-E-K-U-F-O-T, tekufot, and tekufot, which appears in Luria, right, in the 16th century, in Liner, right, in the 19th century, right, tekufot means I'm so surrendered in my humility, I've so surrendered my egoic structure, I'm so surrendered that I'm wildly, radically audacious beyond words, right? I'm so Hod that I'm fully Netzach. That's mm-hmm. that's the hero. So the hero tekufot means literally aggressive, heroic power, right? And maybe we can give a third image here, right? Right, to kind of actually deepen our understanding. So the word for hero in Hebrew is gibor. Gibor, hero, right? It's a three-letter root, Gimel Beit Resh, three-letter root. And Gibor also stands for a certain dimension of arousal, right? It can be kind of the masculine phallic arousal, but it can also be the arousal of, right, the feminine waters. Hmm. So actually the hero and arousal are deeply related, right? There's a dimension of Gibor, of arousal. So there's a field of value. So this is very, it's very deep. It's very subtle. It's very beautiful. The field of value is the field of arousal, mm-hmm. right? When I'm aroused to value, right?
So is that the feminine as well, or in a sense? The masculine penetration is on the Hesed side, and the field is the feminine, or the,
well, I would
the
say
mystery you want to enter or something like that?
I would say that, I would talk in terms of arousal. Arousal. Mm-hmm. Right, is both feminine and masculine, right? There's the arousal of what the Kabbalah calls m'orer mayim nukvin, to arouse the feminine waters, and then there's m'orer ever chai, to arouse the aliveness of the throbbing scepter, if you will, right? So both of those are actually expressions of heroism, right? Mm-hmm. And it's classically gibor, right? Hero is gever. Right, is the phallic side of arousal, but it actually means literally lehit gaber, right? To become large, to become aroused, to move towards. And that actually lives both in men and women. That dimension of, right, that's not the dimension of the feminine that wants to receive and open. It's the dimension of the feminine that's so radically open, that is so penetrating in her desire to be penetrated, if you will, yeah. Right? And she's right, completely, she attracts and allures.
So it's not just, it's not a simplistic active versus passive.
Not at all, right?
That's
right.
Duality, it's, right. It's much more of a dance.
It's aroused.
Of two kinds of intensities.
Oh. That's right, right. And that aroused feminine, right, actually just penetrates the masculine. Actually, in our Napoleon image, right, there's an entire literature about Napoleon and Josephine.
Oh my God, yeah.
Right, and of course he has to divorce her in 1810 because she doesn't produce an heir. But there's actually, Ridley Scott actually, I have to say, did a great job with the movie. There's an incredible scene, right, where, you know, she has an affair. And when he's at the front, his first, I think the Italian front. And of course, you know, it's a given that he's having affairs. That's not even, that's just kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, you just do that if you're Napoleon.
That's just living, right? You're just committing a lot. So he gets furious that she has an affair. And she's just like, didn't you have all these people? And he said, well, of course. That's like, you know. So he gets furious with her when he comes in and he says, you know, in order for me to stay, you have to say you're a nothing without me. Right? And she's like, you're a nothing. He's like completely dominating. And she's like, you know, she just completely surrenders, says, I'm a nothing. And then it's later that night and she turns to him and she says, now you, Napoleon, say, you're a nothing without me. Right? And she kind of penetrates him with her full force. And he says, you have Napoleon after his great victory saying, you know, late at night, I'm a nothing without you. Right. So in other words, and her invitation, right, is she is so profoundly in her aroused feminine that she penetrates Napoleon in a way that no one else did. Mm-hmm. And he writes that his few moments of pleasure, you know, being feeling at home in this world, he doesn't use these words, use that my words, but feeling welcome at home in the world were his moments with her. So there's this sense of, you know, the hero is arousal, because what happens in arousal is, arousal takes me into the field of value. Now, again, there's eros and pseudo eros. So the shadow of arousal will take me into pseudo eros, which is pseudo value. And that's always true. But arousal itself in its clarified form, desire, aroused desire in its clarified form, when I actually clarify not my surface desire, but my deepest desire, whether it's in the realm of the sexual or in the realm of value, or in the realm of ethics or in the realm of creativity, right? Right. When I'm there, I'm aroused. I can see clearly.
And it's not merely impulsive desire.
That's right.
It is your deepest desire, which means it includes an aspect of surrender or right?
That's right.
If there's no aspect of surrender included in it, then we have, again, we have Hesed, the shadow of Hesed all over again, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Which is the shadow of Hesed recapitulates itself, right? In Netzach, yeah. Right? Which is, of course, Netzach in the Tree of Life is directly underneath in the right-handed path underneath Chesed. So the impulsive movement, right, of Netzach, right, needs to be clarified, right? The clarification is the surrender. I clarify my desire. But then when I clarify my desire is not intellectual. It's fully impulsive. So that's the paradox. But it's not impulsive in that I do it immediately.
Maybe spontaneous is the better word.
That's correct. It's fully right. We see, for us, here's the thing. This is very, it's very beautiful. We've lost access to the depth of the word impulsive. For us, impulsive means not clarified in English. Impulsive means not clarified quickly, right? Without careful consideration, without depth. It's a surface word. Because we don't actually believe that there's an impulse in cosmos that we can identify.
Intelligence to impulse, yeah.
That's right. We think there's only a rational actor, right? Right? And that, and all of the contemporary Homo economicus of Adam Smith was built on this rational actor. And the rational actor is an illusion. There are no rational actors in the world, right? Yeah. You know, whether it's Dostoevsky and Notes from the Unscientific Underground, understood very clearly, people act against their own self-interest as a rational actor all the time. And we try and make decisions from the rational actor. So therefore, we exile the impulse to impulsivity. But actually, there's this deeper impulse, which is holy.
Would that be the shadow of Chod, this rationalization? Because that's closer to Deanne Fortune's version of Chod, which is kind of the symbolic realm, right?
I'm afraid of the impulse. I'm afraid of the primal impulse.
So I want to make a boundary around it or contain it or make it into a concept.
That's right. But what I want to do is when Netzach and Hod come together, Hod is, one dimension of Hod is I surrender, right? Right. But to surrender means I surrender only to the deepest Netzach. I don't surrender. Let me say it kind of in romantic terms for a second, but I mean it kind of in archetypal terms. I don't surrender to any man. right? I don't spread my heart and body right, to any man, right? My surrender is this act of incredible discernment, right? There's this unimaginable penetrating discernment, right? Which is my penetrating hod, right? My discernment, my clarification, which then moves me to surrender. And then when I surrender, right, my surrender has the full force of victory, of netzach, of penetration, right? And so there's this dance, right? But when I surrender, then my impulse, which is my wildness, which is my lilit, we demonized feminine wildness, and we called it, she demoned it, we called it love. But actually, right, when I clarify my lilit, right, then I'm actually accessing the depth of my impulse, but only after I've surrendered to the surface. I've surrendered my kind of quick movement towards a superficial impulse, but I'm looking for the depth of the evolutionary impulse uniquely playing in me. And that's, I'm actually realizing I am the personal face of the evolutionary impulse. I am the unique personal face of the evolutionary impulse, unlike any other. And I want to clarify that personal face so that when I surrender, that's my ultimate triumph.
I'm getting the Death Star image because I was just listening to your conversation with Aubrey, you were saying that I can't remember the language you used, but you know that there's a way to go right to the heart of the Death Star, so to speak.
Right. And right. And by the way, Andrew's referring to a movie that was produced by the Unique Self Institute. Claire led that project with, resourced by Mutti, Peter, Aubrey very beautifully is hosting it on his channel. And he kind of introduced it as the board chair, but there's an image in that, in this movie. And it's called From Crisis to Crossing. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's the movie. It's very beautiful. And there's this notion of, right, this the Death Star is this precise penetration, but he can only do, and Andrew, everybody is talking about the last scene in episode 6 of Star Wars. It was the third movie. It's called Episode 6. And Luke Skywalker has to penetrate and explode the Death Star, which is the culture of death. So that's a Netzach moment. So it's a masculine Netzach
penetrating. Heroic moment, yeah.
But he only gets a heroic moment, but he only gets there when he hears Obi-Wan say, turn off the computer.
Yeah. Got it.
Surrenders.
Which means enter the field of value in your language again.
Enter the field, surrender into the field, then let the field move through you and penetrate and blow up the Death Star.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's the inclusion of the field, which seems to be what's missing in this hyper-masculine kind of heroic
vision. Absolutely, brother. And I would say even in the circles that we're a little bit aware of together, right, in which we're trying to articulate this new story of value, right, even in the kind of new age spiritual world, which is a different world, even in the human potential world, which is another world, right, What you feel in these worlds is the sense of netzach, right? Meaning the sense of hyper commodification and selling of intellect without this deep love, without this deep eros, without this deep surrender.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's right? Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. In other words, in order to we need to be heroic at this moment in order to blow up the Death Star. And first we have to surrender to each other, right? Not in a kind of, blind way. Not that there's no, everyone has a different instrument to play in the Unique Self Symphony. And I become a hero. This is very important. I become a hero by knowing where to surrender and where not to, and knowing where to triumph and where not to, and bringing Netzach and Hod together in this kind of unique synergy. Right, that's what I need to become a hero. But that's always unique, and as there's my unique risk, or my unique set of risks that invite my unique heroism. So just like there's not just a self, there's not just a hero. Just like there's not a shadow, right? Right. So there's unique shadow, there's the unique hero, right? And there's the unique self. And of course, the two former are functions of the latter. So if I try and form Andrew's heroics, I will fail.
Yeah.
My heroism is not Andrew's. Andrew has his heroics. And what I need to do is, I need to, with permission, I need to so love Andrew, and he has to actually see that and feel that in my eyes, that he's empowered, right, just by the exchange, to actually go to that place that only Andrew can go and be the hero, which then fights a particular battle, allows me to fight, you know, my battle. One of my favorite, you know, dimensions of Star Wars is that there's a cinematographic, right? Somebody help me with that word.
But cinematographer.
I'm trying to get the graphic. There's a characteristic of the cinematography.
Oh, okay.
That lives in all the movies, in which there's generally three or four battles happening at the same time. Isn't that interesting, friends? There's the battle on the surface, right? There's always, in all the Star Wars, at the key moment, there's generally minimally two, but usually three, usually four battles that are happening in the same time. And those of you who are familiar with movies, Ted, right? So the scene moves from battle to battle. And what you realize is that actually each battle is different. Each battle has different players, but all of the heroes in the different battles need the other heroes to win their battles, right? So in other words, if Andrew doesn't win his battle, Mark can't win his battle, right? It's very beautiful, right?
What I was thinking when you were saying that is that there's different battles we have within ourselves, different fights we have within ourselves. And when we're presented with, let's say, a battle, like, you know, conversation that's difficult or whatever, or something we are afraid of saying or don't want to say, or we have to decide where to attack and where to surrender, you know, in that moment. And that all of those things are sort of interconnected within us and without us. And so, yes, there's a sort of field of struggle and surrender that goes on. Yeah.
You know, that's gorgeous, my friend. And of course, so that takes us to the next point, which is the difference between the Hellenic, right, the Greek notion of the hero, and the Hebraic notion of the hero. And, you know, Matthew Arnold cites Thomas Carlyle, right, in this regard, you know, in his essay, Hebraism and Hellenism, right, in Culture and Anarchy, right, that great work, right? You know, there's this, in the Hebraic notion of the hero is private. Mm. And that's really important, right? In other words, heroism takes place, right, in the conversation that no one sees.
It's Stoic as well. There's an aspect of Stoicism to that.
Let's bracket. We'll get to Stoic. I don't know if it's Stoic. It's an interesting question.
Yeah.
But let's take them one at a time and not just get this notion of private.
But that's what I mean by private. Stoic is an individual decision
not in the sense of Stoic, because Stoicism has like five major characteristics that define Stoicism. One of them is a kind of indifference, which is one of the Stoicism. So the Hebraic notion is non-Stoic, right? Yep. And that's not at all indifferent. It's passionate and engaged, right? Yep. So that's why I don't want to, but Stoic in the sense of private, yes, right? So there's this private moment, right? You know, I'm trying to work out my marriage with my husband. I'm trying to understand whether I should step in or not step in, or how far to step in. So what's going to happen is no one's going to be able to tell me really what the heroic decision is, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, there's a privacy, and privacy requires a radical integrity. And that's the nature of a unique risk, is that no one will tell me, Talia, in my circle, that I should be taking that unique risk, right? It's actually, and it requires not me to be repeating old patterns, requires me to be in a new place, in an original place, but to actually be deeply connected to my deepest heart's desire and to the throb of the evolutionary impulse, right? As it lives in my, as it were, you know, mythopoetically, my aroused feminine waters. And then I need to take that unique risk, right? And that unique risk, right? Ultimately, that decision is private, but more than private, it also may, not only will I take the decision in private, but it's also about how I hold things in my own interiors. So heroism is often, and this is where jihad is beautiful. You know, the deeper notion of jihad, it is not an exterior kind of battle against infidels who are not Sunnis or Shiites or Sunnis and Shiites against each other, right? Right. It's actually jihad, and its beauty is this internal struggle, this private struggle, right? Mm. To actually clarify, right, my deepest heart's desire and actually live, right, from that place. And it's a purely private struggle of jihad, right? And any person who doesn't actually experience jihad, right, it isn't actually welcome in the arms of Allah, right? And that's actually true. But of course, what's happening now in the exterior motions of jihad is you get jacked up on amphetamines and you go and slaughter women. And then you pretend like you didn't. That's not jihad.
Yeah,
violation of the prophet and of the word of the prophet, mm-hmm. right? And so that's deep. So I you know, that notion of interior heroism, that heroism is almost always private, right? Right. And by the way, I just want to say that it's not by accident that it applies to the field of arousal, right? And so, you know, in sexuality between people, you require heroism. Very easy to misconstrue sexual stories. It's very easy for all sorts of egoic reasons to re-narrate sexual stories.
Yeah, right? Conquering and all that.
Right, but right, and so to actually to be the sexual, right, the Ezuhu Gibor, who's the hero, Hakovesha Titro, one who conquers their sexuality. So we understand that, right, at the first level as, you know, don't be sexual in places you shouldn't be sexual. That's absolutely true. But it's more than that. And then if my sexuality got shamed, right, don't defend my sexuality by misconstruing, right, what happened, and then spend my next 50 years telling a false story, right? Because I got shamed at some point, or I couldn't deal with it, or I felt kind of uncomfortable, or I felt, you know, hurt, right? Don't actually conquer the complexity of your sexuality and actually be in integrity. Right. So in other words, the hero is always private. You know, the mother is the hero of a very particular kind. Right. Right. The, mm-hmm. the private hero, the mother, right. Or the father, but the archetype of the mother who finds the extra energy right at the end of the day, right. When her daughter comes in to say goodnight and the mother's exhausted beyond exhaustion, and she reaches down someplace deep inside and finds her daughter's eyes and takes her daughter right into her arms, you know, for 20 seconds, even though she's completely gone. And her daughter feels in that moment welcome in the universe. That mother's a hero. She's an ultimate hero. Achilles doesn't hold a candle to her. Right. That's a hero. Right. 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 You know, a mother who raises, right, you know, her children, her daughters, her sons, and manages to be for them the place where they know they're welcome in the universe, even though she, you know, he or she, father or mother, feels shattered in it, right? That's a hero. So heroism is a private category, and it requires netzach and hod.
Yeah.
There's this full thrusting power of victory and triumph, even though it's unseen and unsung. Yeah.
It doesn't, I was thinking about, a phrase came to mind that it's not for applause. It's not for recognition. Right. It's not so that the society accepts us. Like, the real heroes are willing to go against that on some level.
Yeah, it's for, and what you mean by that is, with permission, brother, and I know that's what you mean. So we know each other well enough. It's not for the applause of the ephemeral audience. It's for the eternal audience.
Yes, the eternal audience. Yes,
right? The
exactly.
Angels are applauding.
Yeah.
Right. You know. Right. Yeah. The angel. Right. In other words, there's any number of Hasidic stories, all of which I will resist from telling now because I know we're at close time, but actually the actual experience of being a hero is that all of evolution and all of eternity applauds me. And I can literally feel the standing ovation, right, of eternity and evolution as I align, right, with the field of value, and I am a hero. And I would say just as the last sentence in this tree of life, right, I cannot be in joy without being a hero, right? When a person says to me, I don't want to be a hero. Like I hear that off right now, I don't want to be, I just want to live a regular life.
Yeah.
They're lying, right? In other words, yeah. Right? In other words, we have to democratize the hero. Every human being has a heroic character. It's why everyone goes to watch Superman. It's why in the middle of post-modernity, when we've correctly problematized the pre-tragic or fundamentalist hero, right? You know, Marvel explodes, you know, the Marvel franchise with Avi Arad, right? And they make hero movies because we have the sense that the hero is the precursor, the hero augurs for, right? I just want to use the word augurs for because it's fun, mm-hmm. right? The hero kind of is a prescient invitation to the new human and the new humanity. Is the early adopter of Homo Amor. The hero is the beginning of the new human. And the hero is Netzach and Hope. Wow, my mm-hmm. friend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Greg, very good. Yeah, the hero. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about that, but perhaps. Right, well,
give us a last word, my friend.
Oh, no. The image I was getting, and one of my heroes is Gurdjieff, and somebody asked him why he didn't hang out in his castle because he was a man of means and just, you know, write his book quietly, whereas he would go to dance halls and cafes and he'd go right in the middle of Paris in the most busy, crazy place. He'd always go towards the chaos instead of away. And he said, I'm a man and not a dog, but I think he means I'm a hero. You know, I want to be a hero. I don't want to be that wouldn't work today. Yeah. In today's society, it would be I want, so that means that there's a sacrifice of comfort.
Yes.
And there's a desire to go into the difficulty, but also to celebrate and you know, and he said that being with those people in, you know, in the dance hall would allow him to write because he would feel love, right? He would feel.
That's a gorgeous place for us to conclude, you know, two things just in conclusion. That's beautiful, Andrew, right? So two things. One, just a personal thing, which is all of the books that I've written, right? I've written at a busy cafe, right? In other words, that's where I draw all my writing, at kind of the busiest, noisiest cafe.
There you go.
Right? Right. Because you can't write in a, you have to kind of, right? But two is, you're absolutely right. There's always a giving up of comfort, right? And there's always this realization. The hero knows that the opposite of pain is not pleasure. The hero knows that the opposite of pain is comfort, right? Mm-hmm. And if I want the pleasure of being a hero, which is not an egoic pleasure, it's what the world needs me to be in. And maybe we can finish here. The world needs me to merge Netzach and Hod, and to actually be the unique hero that's mine to be, without which, you know, and to be the unique hero, I've got to do my own internal jihad, and I have to play my role on the stage of history. I need to do both. I need to participate in the band of outrageous lovers, right? If that's right, I need to be a pillar in the temple, and I need to be in my own jihad, and I need to do them both, and they're not at expense of each other, right? Reality desperately needs me to be, right, the unique hero, right, that is my life. Thank you, brother. Amen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Claire. Yay.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Andrew. What a beautiful dialogue again.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Wonderful, thank as always. You. So we have two more to go in the tree
of life.
Two more to go in the tree of life. Thank you, everyone.
Yay.